Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I'm honored to welcome a friend of mine, Sue Canfield, who is an expert social media strategist for authors. We have been, I wouldn't say colleagues, but we've been very aware of each other for a long time. We kind of work in the same sphere, and we're very aware of each other's work, and she is great. Now, Sue specializes in social media book marketing, promotion, and consultations for nonfiction authors. And today she's here to share a lot of tips and advice on why authors should use social media marketing. That's a big one. The big mistakes that authors should avoid, and really anybody should avoid on social media marketing, the right way to use social media for book marketing, book launch tips, very, very exciting topic, excuse me, and using LinkedIn to make good connections. Good morning, Sue. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm excited to have you here.
Good morning, Denise, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to connect with you on this show today.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. This is important. Sorry, I'm sorry. Say it again.
I was just going to say we have been in each other's circles for quite a few years, so it's nice to finally be able to do this.
Yeah, you and your husband, Joel, I think we all kind of started out at the same time. We won't say how long ago that was. It's an embarrassing long time ago.
It was quite a while back.
That's what makes us so good at what we do. So tell people a bit more about yourself and why they want to be listening to us today, and then I've got a ton of questions for you.
Great. Well, you know, it really goes back to when I was a little girl. For some reason, I just loved to play secretary, and I had it in my mind that I was going to be the world's best secretary. That was long before the virtual world that we have today. But there was a long hallway in our home, and at the very end was my bedroom. And I would sit at a desk there at the end of that hallway, looking down the hallway at all those closed doors where the other bedrooms were. And I'd pretend that I was the secretary for all these important people in these various offices. And I was just going to be the world's best. I was going to type and do shorthand and make their travel arrangements. Well, I did accomplish that goal finally of being the quote-unquote world's best secretary. I was in the corporate world for quite a while. I left that in 2003. But at the time I left, I was a secretary for the president and the sales director of a small corporation in San Diego. And, well, honestly, I was great at my job. My 7 years there really helped me to develop the skills that have helped me to succeed today as an entrepreneur. But I did leave that corporate world.
So what launched you out of there and into the virtual world? Because that's always a big question I get as well. It's like, okay, Denise, you know, I mean, I've always owned my own business most of the time. There have been a couple occasions when I worked in someone else's office, which is never a good idea for somebody like me.
No.
I run with scissors. I don't play well with others. If you want coffee, get it your own damn self. Seriously. So you can imagine.
I am
so,
the same
way. I launched because I really needed to work alone. I desperately needed to work alone. But what drove you out of the, you know, the corporate market?
There was a big change in my life. I ended up going through a divorce and getting remarried. And moving away from where I was, so I couldn't work at that job anymore. I was 500 miles away. And I ended up having a blessing at nearly 40, my youngest child. And I realized that I didn't ever want to go back to work outside the home. I wanted to be at home. with my daughter, and my husband and I decided that we wanted to work together from home, running our own business, especially after I had a health issue that required me to be in the hospital for 4 months and took about a year to physically recover from that. And so there was just no way that I was going to go back into the corporate world and leave my little girl, you know, with a babysitter, and my health didn't really allow for it. And my husband and I really wanted to work together to build something that we could do from home. So in 2005 is when I started as a virtual assistant. And then over the years, I worked with various authors and speakers. I was attending a lot of local meetups and business mixers. At the time, I was living in the Sacramento, California area. So I connected with these local authors, these local speakers. And as things worked out, my virtual assistant business ended up morphing so that I now work primarily with nonfiction authors. And so we rebranded about 2 years ago so that our company name is now Osoma, which is for authors social marketing, and that's what we primarily focus on. I also did co-author with my husband nearly a decade ago the book The Common Sense Virtual Assistant, Becoming an Entrepreneur, Not an Employee.
I have that book.
I also wrote,
so everybody knows, I have it on my bookshelf.
I believe you were even one of my early beta readers, and I believe you're mentioned in the book more than once.
Oh, really?
I
don't remember that. I'll have
to
grab it and read it again. I get, oddly enough, I get mentioned, you know, just maybe a line, a short paragraph in people's books, and I'm not even aware of it sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll say, oh,
yeah.
Denise, I read about you in so-and-so's book. I'm like, what? I didn't know. Yeah, I honestly don't remember that. I'm glad you reminded me. I'm going to go read it again.
Oh, and if I didn't mention you, now I will feel really badly, but I do know that you were one of my early beta readers, and that your
I'm not offended,
input was
but
very
if
valuable.
I am, wonderful. Oh, thank you.
Yay! And that book is still being used in a community college course. Actually, in Illinois, they have a virtual class, and every semester when they start their class, they contact me and place an order for books for however many are going to be in that class. And they use that as one of their textbooks to help those that are wanting to become virtual assistants. And it is, you know, written with the idea of helping someone to be able to do like you and I do and work for ourselves from home instead of having to go out into the corporate world. So that particular book isn't so much about here's how to be a virtual assistant, but more about how you can run your business as a VA, as an entrepreneur, and not run it as though you're just still an employee, because you're not.
And I'm so glad
and
you
I
said
also,
that word business, because so many new virtual assistants coming into the industry, and since you and I started, and I started before you did, actually, I started around 2001, 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, right around 2006, 2008, I think, I mean, it just exploded. And people came and went and came and went. But what a lot of them didn't and still don't realize is that we are small business owners. We're not working for our clients. We're working with our clients. So I'm so glad you made that distinction.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And I did also write another little book that's out there on Amazon titled Succeed as a Chief Virtual Officer, Setting Up a Successful Virtual Assistant Business. And that is designed for a little bit more of the hands-on. And at that time that I wrote it, I referred to myself also as a chief virtual officer because, you know, there's always the CFO and the CEO. And so we became the CVOs for a while. Now, though, that my business is more social media marketing, I'm the chief social media officer. But because of having written those books, and my husband wrote several nonfiction books and is currently a fiction author, I really focused on the authors and how to help them to be social, get noticed using current social media because it constantly changes, to market their book, themselves, their business with what I call the right way because there are some wrong ways out there. And so that's what we do now. My team and I, we provide the gold standard, if you will, in social media marketing. And that's why our name, Asoma, starts with A-U. That happens to be the chemical symbol for gold.
Oh, very nice. I like that. Okay, so why, and I've got a ton of questions for you. I mean, I work with authors and speakers. As you know, I'm constantly interviewing authors and speakers, and I don't know how that happened, to be very honest with you, but I get... It just kind of evolved. Oh, I do know how it happened. I'm going to mention my friend Meredith Elliott Powell. She wrote a book called Winning in the Trust and Value Economy some years ago. And I went to the post office, and here's this book from her, I think it's from her editor. Somebody sent the book to me, and I went, and they said, we would like for you to read this book, if you would, and consider, you know, getting her on your podcast. And I went, really? I read the book and went, oh, couldn't get her on quick enough, fell in love with her, fell in love with the book. Mm-hmm. And apparently people who are, you know, sending out press releases and they're in PR and they're working with authors and speakers are paying attention. And I get books, I promise you, I go to the post office and I get books every single week. I've actually had to add another bookcase to my office. So it's a fascinating world. It wasn't a hardship.
Yeah.
I'll put the dog bed out in the hall or the foyer or somewhere. But, you know, no, I won't.
Yes,
she would kill me. But, you know, I love to get these books, and often they're autographed, which I really, really love. So it happens. But I'm like you. I work with a lot of authors and speakers. So one of the things that I do know and I learned very early on is that, you know, when self-publishing kind of came along, and, you know, people started saying, look, I can't wait for 2 or 3 years to, you know, have maybe get picked up by a house, maybe get my book out. So I'm going to go a different route, and I'm going to start publishing or self-publishing or doing whatever. And then I kind of noticed, and you probably noticed this as well, that once people started building their own social media platforms, then the publishing houses went, okay, now we'll pay attention to you. Did you find that?
Right. Absolutely. And that's even more so today. In fact, earlier this year, I reached out and spoke to several publishers, editors, and literary agents on exactly that topic, whether or not a platform was necessary and what an author should or shouldn't do. And though it's not the end all, if you have a platform, you're going to get a publisher, and if you don't have a platform, you're not. It certainly is a large factor in what they look at now. And especially for a nonfiction author, you know, anytime that they are going to be looking for a literary agent or a publisher, they need to have a book proposal. And in that book proposal, one of the largest sections is the marketing section. And then one of the largest sections in that marketing section is the social media marketing. And they want to see, what is your platform currently? What do you plan to do to expand it? How are you going to use those social media platforms to market your book, to sell your book? So that all is a big part of it in the way that it works today.
So gone are the days when your publishing house sends you out on a book tour, right? I mean, you have to prove that you've got something, that you've got a big social media reach, you know, nationally and internationally. I mean, it does make sense. I mean, they've had to pull their belts in, too. And things do evolve.
In fact,
think how we market evolves.
You know, and regarding book tours in particular, I had opportunity to speak with one book publisher, and he said that even with bigger names, like, you know, we're talking fiction books and bigger names out there like James Patterson and people like that, obviously those people already have a huge following. They know their books are going to sell. No big deal for them to, you know, invest a little money and go on a book tour with, you know, have them go on a book tour. But even so, usually they are incorporating it with what the author already has in place. So, for example, they're looking for an author to say, oh, yeah, you know, I've already planned to go on a couple of, even a small book tour, and I'm going to go to this local bookstore in my state, and then let's say in three neighboring states. And when a publisher sees that you already have that in place, then they're more than willing to invest a little bit more and maybe expand that or get you another book event or book signing at a nearby event or a nearby bookstore, you know, and add to that. But they're really looking for you to already have something in place.
I did know that. What I'm thinking, though, is a lot of people don't really understand just how long a good social media, let's call it a marketing campaign, but it's really not. I call it a long game. You know, it takes a long time to build up that audience, to get them to know you, like you, and trust you, as Meredith says. For them to go, oh, you've got a book out? I definitely want to hear more about this. So what should authors do when they're saying, or maybe let's just start from the very beginning. You've got somebody who's written a great book. They don't know if, let's say they're going to self-publish it. We're just going to do a quick case study here. And they're going to going to get it out there. They're going to get it up on Goodreads and Amazon and into Barnes and Nobles. They're going to hire somebody to get all that work done, assuming it's you. So what do they do now? Where do they start their social media? And how do they start their social media? Because let's face it, you and I know social media can be very tricky. It can either be your biggest friend or it can bite you in the butt very quickly. So if you don't mind, give us some really great tips and ideas where people can start to put their thoughts together, start writing out, okay, this is what I need to do, step one, step two, step three, step four. So do you mind doing that?
Sure. And really with anyone, obviously you cannot manage every single social media platform efficiently, effectively. You know, an author would spend all their time just doing social media if they tried to be everywhere and managed it all exactly right. There are just too many out there. There's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn are kind of the three, you know, big ones, and now Instagram is in there as well. But there's a ton of other places too. As you mentioned, they might have a Goodreads account, their Amazon author page, which isn't so much social media, but still there's a presence there that they would want to maintain. So again, to actually maintain it all is going to be overwhelming. So I always suggest that an author do have a presence on each of those platforms, because that way your readers can find you anywhere. But really to start and focus on one, and there's a lot to determining which is the one that you really want to focus on. There's two major factors, I would say, in determining that. One is, where would you find the audience that you think would read your book? And two, which platform are you most comfortable with? And once you kind of get the intersection of that, then that's the platform that I would suggest starting with to really grow and manage. And then once you're comfortable and you have that established, you might move on to add a second one. So a lot of times, particularly the ones I work with being nonfiction authors, they find a lot of their audiences on LinkedIn, and many of them being professionals are comfortable also with LinkedIn. So that might be where they start, and they would update their profile completely to make sure that it reflects that they are an author, that they have this book out. They're going to post information on their status updates about the book, and not in your face, here's my book, buy it, but sharing valuable tips and insights from the book. Particularly nonfiction authors, this is pretty easy to do because they've written this book that has all this valuable information that they want to share with people. It's really easy to pick a couple of sentences, a vital message, post that, link to your website where people can learn more information, read your blog, do that whole come to know you, like you, trust you, as you mentioned earlier, and eventually, you know, purchase your book, obviously. And with LinkedIn, there are other strategies as well. There are groups, which aren't necessarily as interactive as, let's say, a Facebook group, but they are starting to pick up again. Groups are starting to pick up again in LinkedIn. And it's a great way to get to interact with people, sharing other people's discussions, share value there. And once they see that you have something of value, they're going to come to you to find out what else you can share and then learn about your book. So I encourage an author, as soon as they even know that they're going to write a book, that's when they really want to start their social media presence and start sharing those interesting, valuable tips and quotes so that people do come to understand that they have something to share with them and that it's not just that they are trying to push their book or their business.
So you know what I have found out on social media? Oh, I'm sorry. You must be on a cell phone because I keep interrupting you.
Well, I am, but that's okay. Please go ahead.
Oh. There's always, just so our audience knows, I'm not doing it deliberately. When somebody calls in on the cell phone, there is a bit of a delay. So I accidentally speak over. I'm not being rude, I promise. So just pardon me for that. But one of the things that I have found that is highly popular on Facebook in particular, LinkedIn is not quite as, like you said, kind of fun or as loosey-goosey as Facebook. But I know that when authors will put up this, okay, I just got my book covers back from, you know, my graphic artist, and they'll put up 3 or 4 book covers and let people vote on them, and people love to do that. And it has kind of a 2 or 3-fold, you know, purpose. Number one, you're letting people know you're writing a book. Number two, you're gaining and gathering their interest because now they have a vested interest. They just voted on the book cover or the book title, or the book tagline. Mm-hmm. So if you put it out there on Facebook and you make your audience part of the process, when that book is ready to come out, they're all in. They're already aware of it. So that's just my little tip for the day.
Yes, and that is a very good tip. People love visuals, so when you're able to share, especially a book cover idea and get feedback, it can be a really great tool to share that on social media and get that feedback. It can also be a two-edged sword, so I just always share a word of caution that when an author does that, and I do think they should, but that the author needs to remember that they're going to get a lot of different ideas on that and a lot of feedback. And too many times I see an author think, oh, now I have 100 comments on this, and they try to implement every single change to the cover, and then they aren't happy because, one, they can't make every single person happy. Two, they now have changed what they wanted for their book cover to make someone else happy. So just to keep in mind that when you do that, the feedback is great. Sometimes it's really valuable, and other times, you know, discard that. That isn't really what I wanted. That doesn't fit in with what my aim was for this book cover.
Exactly. Don't take it personally.
Remember that.
Just gathering information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just thank everybody very politely and say, oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate your input. And then go do what you were going to do in the first place. I mean, you're the author. You
right.
know what you want to do. And I put up my book cover, which is almost done. My book is, rather. And I'm telling you, the title that I was madly in love with, nobody liked. Nope, not one person.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what? Mm-hmm. I stomped around like a kid for half a day. And then I went back and I read. I did. I threw a little mini fit.
Right.
It was fun. And then
right.
I went back and I read some of the suggestions, and I married two of them, and they were brilliant. Now,
yes.
Did the purpose yes. of the book change? Not a bit. Did the tagline change? A little bit. That was part of the two that I married. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. But the two suggestions that I took were from people who are extremely well-known book authors. So, you know, I kind of was willing to listen. And the others, I was like, oh, gee, that's, you know, great. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I did, but I wasn't going to take any of it to heart once I calmed down. So I agree with you. Put it out there, but don't take it personally, because you know, I did. Yeah. I stomped around, stuck my head in the refrigerator, and meditated for a while. It was pathetic.
We all do that, you know, and it's always a good idea to sleep on something before you make a decision. But the idea of sharing images, too, I wanted to kind of go back to a slightly different strategy as far as that's concerned, is to share images to make announcements of sorts regarding your book. So, for example, I have a client I've worked with for quite some time who was looking for a literary agent, and he finally got his agent. And so we found an image he wanted to use so that the image is consistent for each announcement he's going to make, but then the text is going to be different for each announcement. So his first announcement was about, hey, I signed a literary agent, mentioned who he was, you know, and where to find him. And so we had that image and message to share on all of his social media. And people, they're just drawn to that. There's an image and it's about, and great, he got an agent. People are congratulating him. Wonderful. And he, you know, extended that to even share that with his email list, and we created a blog post about it. It really is helping to generate anticipation for the book, you know, because now he's got the agent. Well, he just signed with the publisher not even 2 weeks ago, I'm going to say. And so we did a similar announcement and that he now is under contract with this publisher, linking to where they are, you know, mentioning a little bit about who they are and what they do as well. And so now that's, again, exciting, and his audience is great. You know, now I actually have a publisher and his book launch date, and when the publisher expects to actually publish it in the spring of 2019. So there's generating this buzz now around the book. Like, great, you know, especially his longtime followers who have known. He's been posting tips from his book for quite some time. We've actually been working together for 2 years. And all this time he was sending out book proposals. Now he's got the agent, now he's got the publisher. When the book is actually published, we'll do another announcement. But even before then, he'll have his book cover done, and we'll, you know, post an announcement about that. We probably won't get feedback on that cover, because that's going to be something that the publisher is working with him, and they'll just end up making that decision for him since he's not self-publishing. But
very
all
nice.
Along,
congratulations.
You know, Yeah, it's very exciting for him. And this is his name is George. He's actually a retail consultant. So for him to have worked together for the last couple of years to get his social media growing and all, he still has his consulting business. So that's really where his money is, you know, coming in, so that he could afford to pay to have his social media presence managed and have these blogs put out. A lot of them were little excerpts from the book to actually share something of value to those that are other within the retail industry. So this is a more focused, it's not like we're sending these messages out to everyone, but we're connecting with people in the retail industry and focusing his messages on that. And he's connected with other retail consultants, and they actually, you know, retweet each other's messages. There isn't that feeling of, oh, you're my competitor, you know, because we're in the same field. They each are writing about different things at times. And so we get a lot of cross promotion that way, really. It's been very exciting for George to have been working through this process.
And I was going to note, because you said something important a couple of minutes ago, that, you know, when you're sending out these images and these kind of updates, that, you know, you're mentioning the publisher, you're mentioning the agent. Now, if you're tagging them properly in social media, now you're leveraging their audience. And I think a lot of people don't understand the power of leveraging other people's audiences. Now, you have to be judicious. You have to be careful about it, Because if you, you know, tag me in something that has to do with, I don't know, tennis shoes, I'm going to untag myself and probably have a stern chat with you. You know, you have
right.
to be very careful
it
how you're doing
relevant.
That. Yeah.
Right. It must be relevant. And that's something that, you know, I tell all of the prospects that come to me and all of my clients is that what we do is going to be relevant to your particular topic. Unfortunately, one of the big mistakes I see being made by some social media consultants with their clients is they promise them, you know, we're going to grow your Twitter following. We're going to, you know, get this many people on your Facebook page. And the reason being, the way they do it is they go out and they follow, as the saying goes, every Tom, Dick, and Harry on Twitter, no matter what, hoping that all those people will follow back. And we don't do that because that isn't how you grow your network effectively. All that does is give you numbers that don't mean anything. You want to find those people that are relevant to your industry that are tweeting about or in their bio have some information about your topic. You know, so example, again, this retail consultant, we're looking at people who in their bio mention retail, in their tweets mention retail. We know they're in retail because of being connected on LinkedIn already, something along those lines. It has to be relevant. But the way to leverage kind of other people within that industry then is to go and we have always what we call a list of influencers. So these are people that are of some influence within that industry. So for this retail consultant, people within the retail industry. I had another client who she actually was in the legal industry. So, you know, those people are going to be different. But those influencers that we follow, we then look at who are they following and who are following them and do they have lists, particularly in Twitter. I have to say I love lists in Twitter. So we create these lists and then we look at those lists of those influencers to see, because usually their audience is going to be the same type of people that you want to connect with. So using those lists, it's really easy then to look at who's following them, who's retweeting them, go out and connect with those people as well. And we find, especially in the Twitter world, there's a real feeling of reciprocity. So that if you're sharing something that one of your competitors or influencers has tweeted, often they're sharing what you have tweeted with their audience. And so that is another way to grow that, but within that relevant industry and not just spamming everybody out there.
Right. And another way to find people who are relevant to your industry is to go to Amazon. Type in a keyword, see who's talking, writing about the same things that you are, then find them on social media. I mean, I use Amazon for everything. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
If I find something that I want to purchase somewhere else and they don't have any ratings on it, I kind of use it like my consumer report. I will go over to Amazon, read the ratings on whatever it is I wanted to buy, and then go right back to JCPenney's and buy it over there. Sorry, Amazon.
Right.
That's just the way it works. But if you want to find other authors and what they're doing and talking about, most of them have their author page. Their blog is tuned in. You can figure out where they are on social media. It's a great way to find out who's in your space.
Exactly. And another thing to do is to go and look at the profiles, if they are there, of people who have reviewed those books. So, you know, if there's a somebody within your space who's written a book on a similar topic, look at those book reviews. Often the people who've reviewed those books have their profile filled out with their website and their social media and their email even. In fact, you can even reach out to some of those and say, I saw that you reviewed this book, title of book. I've written a similar book, wondered if you'd be interested in, you know, reviewing it, and reach out to them. If they've put their information there on their profile on Amazon, it's public. You can absolutely do that. A great way to get reviewers for your book within a similar topic.
That's excellent. Okay, I think we've pretty much covered the right way to use social media for book marketing. Is there anything you wanted to add before I move on to my next question?
No, let's move on to your next question.
Okay. So now we've talked about the right way to do it and, you know, some great ideas here. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice today. But what are the things that you absolutely do not want to do? We covered a couple of them, like don't go spam people and don't go, you know, just tagging on Facebook gives me a headache every day. But what are the biggest mistakes that you see that you really want to, you know, warn people to avoid these mistakes?
Mm-hmm. And I may have touched on this earlier. Pardon me if I did. But the number one thing I see, the biggest mistake, is if a person is using social media and the only things they post about are, here's my book, here's my product, here's how my book can help you. When it's just all about that, and obviously everything they post is just to get people to buy their book or product or service, I'm quickly turned off, and I think most people are. Click unfollow.
Absolutely.
Delete.
Yep.
No longer want to be your friend. Yeah, you know, I mean, once in a while, that's okay. But if you're sharing something of value and the link happens to, you know, click over to your Facebook, I mean, to your book page or your product page, I mean, that's fine because you've shared something of value. So, again, there's that, we've all heard of the 80-20 rule. I like to call it the 80-20 principle. It's not a rule. It's not carved in stone. It might be 70-30 sometimes. But the point being, the majority of a person's messages really should be to share something of value, share an insight, share a tip. Even sharing other people's information that
exactly.
ties in with your own topic. And, you know, you can even share, I worked with a client for a while, and she had 10 chapters in her book. And what we did was we went out and found other sources that covered each of those 10 topics. And we'd share a link to their information and then noted below in the comments, chapter 6, let's say, of my book covers this topic as well, and then maybe a little tip from her book. So again, and not every time, but it would be a great way to share somebody else's information regarding the same topic, but oh, here's what I have to say about it as well. But it wasn't the only thing that was posted, because that people are just going to turn off. So you really do need to make sure that you share value, share other people's information. Too many times I think people are just afraid of, oh, well, if I share somebody else's information, then they're going to go to that website and they're going to forget all about me. No, it doesn't work that way. Instead, your audience is going to think, look at that. They shared something of value. They're not afraid to share what other people have to say. Now I want to go see what they say as well.
Exactly. Not everybody is your competitor. Mm-hmm. And look, I have always embraced my competitors because, frankly, I am just arrogant enough to think I don't have any. Isn't that silly? But fortunately, I can laugh at myself.
For all of us.
I know. We're just so good. Everybody loves us. But the thing is, by curating other people's content, you are opening up a wider audience because, you know, maybe they're not madly in love with your content at this moment. Maybe there's not sufficient interest in your stuff right now, but you're keeping their best interest in mind, and that's the way they're going to take it. It's like if I see something of yours, like, ooh, my audience would love that, I share it. I don't even think about it. I do this for other, you know, online business managers, other web developers. There's a ton of us out there. Why would I try to get everybody for myself? Even though I think I deserve it. But still, I mean, once you start curating other people's content, and all of a sudden you're kind of like the library. You walk in and you go, ooh, there's a wealth of information here. Let's see what Sue is sharing today. What she got? What'd she find for me? That's what happens.
Exactly.
So that's my two cents for it.
Exactly. And so, in order for that to happen, you have to be, you know, engaged. And again, this is another big mistake I see a lot of times authors make, is they automate and that's all they do. And I'm a huge proponent of automation. I use it all the time for myself and my clients. But that can't be the only thing that you do. If you just totally automate your social media and never touch it yourself, you're going to be losing out because people are going to like your post or comment or share. And if you aren't, you know, engaged in that and seeing that, then you don't know to say, hey, thanks for sharing. Saw you liked that. You know, thank you for retweeting. You want to engage with your audience. If you don't do that, if people are constantly liking your posts and you never, ever acknowledge that, they're going to stop doing that eventually as well. So you do want to have that engagement, not just automate. Don't be stagnant. If somebody has left a comment or asked a question on social media, which, you know, it can be very useful for engaging with people, then you need to respond. So part of what I do, for example, for my clients, because a lot of times they do, they're like, I don't want to deal with it. You deal with it all. I'm writing. But there are certain things that they need to address. So as part of my service, what I do is I bring it to their attention and I'll say, hey, Ruth, did you see that on Twitter the other day so-and-so asked this question? And she'll say, thank you for sharing that with me. Then she goes and knows, now I better go check it out, and responds to that. So there is that need for engagement.
There is. It's huge. I do the same thing with my clients. Some, I do all the engagement. I speak in their tone, literally. Others, mm-hmm. I will automate, and then I'll say, hey, Jim, you've got this great, you know, email on Facebook. You need to respond to it, or you need to go over here to your Facebook page and respond to that. And he will, or they will, whoever they are. Most of the time, though, my clients say, Denise, take care of it. And I do, but sometimes it's going to be just personal enough that I'm like, nope, this is you take care of it.
Right.
You go in there and you handle it. But you're right, that engagement, that back-and-forth dialogue and connecting and networking, whether you're doing it as a service for your clients or your client is having you do the posting and they take an hour every day, which I strongly recommend, that they take 30, 40 minutes every day, hit all of their social media accounts, look for comments, you know, look for places where they can stand up and go, hey, I'm here. How can I help you? You know, oh, that's a great question. Thank you for connecting, whatever it is. And the end result of that, Sue, and I know you've seen this too, is that all of a sudden their fear of social media kind of melts away and they're like, oh, people like me. In Sally Field's words, they really, really like me. And all of a sudden they're wanting to get more engaged and they love what you do. They don't want you to stop, but they're willing to step up and be a lot more personable. And people know when you're being personable and they like you. So, you know, let's take that into big consideration. It's important.
Exactly. I also think it's important that people schedule to do a once-a-year update of their profiles, more often if necessary, but at least once a year. Too often I see that somebody, you know, comes to me and is like, well, can you help me out with my LinkedIn, you know, for an example. And I go and I look and they don't have their current position. They don't even mention their book, you know, or on Twitter they've got something pinned from 2016 that, you know, people look at that and they're like, well, I mean, even if the information is still relevant, create something new, repin it, you know, so it looks fresh. So to just take note of that and kind of go through, I have a checklist where I go through each social media profile annually, and just make sure that they're updated and freshened and current so that your followers know that you're paying attention and that the information you have to share is current as well.
Now, you mentioned LinkedIn, and that was going to be one of my next questions. LinkedIn, if you're a Facebook aficionado or even Twitter, LinkedIn is almost foreign country. You know, it's a different kind of an atmosphere over there. It's business to business. You can't get as kind of goofy or silly as you can get on Facebook. Not that I'm saying goofy or silly on Facebook is the right way to go.
Right.
But I am guilty of it. I do it all the time. But I'm also very serious on Facebook. Mm-hmm. You know, my cat, Hamilton, has his own hashtag. Hamilton is an ass. And he is. So,
yeah.
And people comment on him all the time. But here's the thing. On LinkedIn, you need to get pretty serious over there because those are largely business-to-business serious people. So what are some of your tips for LinkedIn? Because if you're not on LinkedIn, stop what you're doing and do it today. I'm telling you right now, get your LinkedIn account up and running. call Sue. She can
absolutely
help you.
Absolutely.
What are your best tips for LinkedIn?
Yes. And it is true. LinkedIn is more serious, more for professionals. And so, again, not everybody maybe will be using LinkedIn a lot, but as you said, they should still have a profile there. Whatever they're doing, whether it's fiction or nonfiction or something totally different, they need to have their presence there. They need to have it all up to date. If they have a book, there's a publication section where you can include that information, the title, you know, the publisher, when it was released, a link to where it can be purchased on your website or on Amazon. So all of that needs to be there. Then there are groups on LinkedIn. I would recommend joining at least two or three groups that are relevant to what you're doing, and join in on their discussions before you ever, you know, post something of your own or before you even try to connect with other members. Join in on those discussions that are already there. Share something of value. If there's a post that asks a question, you know, answer it. If you can answer it in a way that, you know, mentions your book, that's great. People will then, you know, check out your profile more and learn about you. And then you can start reaching out to members as you connect with them in the discussions. You can start reaching out to members and asking if you can connect with them and include them in your LinkedIn network and kind of grow your sphere of influence that way. And then once you've done that and joined in on other discussions, then post your own discussion. Post a question or a comment or something of value that you can share from your book, perhaps, and get some engagement that way. Then another thing, I love to use LinkedIn to find other people that I really want to connect with and get to know better. It's been a lot of fun this year. I really focused on LinkedIn this year to grow my network of people. I wanted to find people that I could refer to clients. So because I work mainly with nonfiction authors, I wanted to find editors and proofreaders and ghostwriters and publishers and agents, people within that industry that I could then refer to my clients. Because a lot of times my clients will say, well, do you know a really good ghostwriter? Who could you refer to me who's a good literary agent? So I really started reaching out to those individuals, letting them know I'd love to chat with them, learn more about them. Then I would ask them if they would schedule a 15-minute get-to-know-you chat. We'd get on the phone. I'd ask them all kinds of questions and let them just talk and tell me all about who they are, what they do, who their ideal client is, taking notes the whole time so I would know this one is good for my client or maybe not, but I in the future. And, of course, at the end, they always say, oh, you know, tell me about your business as well. So I've made a lot of really great connections this year on LinkedIn. I've had some really good phone conversations. I've even been able to refer people to some of these connections, and I've gotten referrals right back. In fact, I've gotten new clients on the same day right back, and that was a lot of fun to, especially this one person I connected with. I was just trying to get to know her so that she was an editor, and I really was looking for another editor for a particular client of mine. And at the end of the conversation, she was like, well, I know somebody that I can refer to you. Let me give you their name. And we got off the phone. She emailed me and this other person, introduced us by email. And this person emailed me immediately and said, well, when can you talk? And I said, I happen to have some time this afternoon. Here's a link to my calendar. Book a 15-minute call. And he did. And at the end of that call, he was ready to give me money and move on. It was quite exciting, and that wasn't even what I was trying to accomplish, but it did happen. And the really fun thing from doing that this year and connecting with all these people is I was approached by a colleague who said, we're putting together a course for LinkedIn and we'd like to use your experience as a case study. So that was a lot of fun. I have a, like a 2-minute part in this LinkedIn course that they used my story of the course is about growing your small business with LinkedIn, and they used my story of how I was connecting with people. So that was a lot of fun. So yeah, go out there and connect with people on LinkedIn. Be generous when you do it with the idea of getting to know them and seeing how you can refer them to somebody you might know.
And see that, and congratulations. That I love that story. That, you know, these things happen when you're generous with your, you know, with your time. And I call it my invisible Rolodex, my mental Rolodex. I'm constantly connecting people. I don't ever ask for anything back, but you know what? It always does come back. One thing that, and LinkedIn is a good place to do this kind of work, but I wanted to mention, too, one of the things, and this is on Facebook in particular, this happens. Please don't do this. This goes, you know, right back to the right way to use social media marketing. You know, I'll get a friend request, and I always kind of vet them. Like, okay, who are you? Do we, you know, we have friends in common. Would I even be interested in what it is that you're doing, promoting, talking about? Would you make a good guest for my podcast? I have this whole litany of questions. And I turn away more people than I actually say, sure, you know, this, you know, I'd love to have you as a friend. If you want to tick me off on Facebook, do not within 10 minutes send me a like my page request. I will unfriend you quicker than I can even hit my keyboard, it seems like. My thought there is, I don't know you. I don't like you. I don't trust you. We haven't had coffee, and you're asking me to the prom? No.
Right.
It's bad marketing. Right. It's just, and it's a trigger point for me. But you've kind of commented on it. You know, get in, especially in LinkedIn, get in there and chat. Be sociable. Be personable. You know, comment on their links, but don't walk in and grab somebody by the shirt collar and go, hey, I've got this book. I want you to pay attention to me. That's not how you socialize in real life. Don't do it on social media. And if you do it in real life, stop it. It's not. People will not like you. Just don't do it.
Right.
But and, you know, you have to work way in. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. It is a long game, and you have to really get to know each other or give it a shot at any rate.
Right. And that is true. And it happens on LinkedIn as well, where someone will connect and then immediately email me with something that from an email tool like Constant Contact or MailChimp. So I know they've already added me to their list. And that's just not good etiquette, let alone, I believe, goes against the law.
I have a stern talk with those people as well, right after I block them.
Yeah, you know, that exactly. That is not the way to grow your list. You know, once you've had a conversation with them and you've shared value and you've received some value, then you might ask, you know, hey, I have this newsletter. Do you want to come sign up for it? You know, I provide these insights every month. Here's a link to where you can sign up for it and let them, you know, take that step. But don't add me to your newsletter list without my permission. It is not the proper way to do things.
No, it's not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm constantly having that happen with LinkedIn in particular. And they'll say, well, you know, LinkedIn says we can do it. I don't care what LinkedIn says. I'm telling you, you can't do it. Don't do it. And they'll argue with me sometimes. Most times I just go, oh, no, it didn't. And, I mean, if I think it was just they're new and they don't know what they're doing, I'll try to say, listen, this is, you know, thank you for your interest in me, but let me explain to you why it's not a good idea. Some of them will say, oh, I didn't know. Others will get nasty, and that's when I'm like, okay, fine with that. But just don't do it. And the worst thing to do, and I know when somebody has added me to an email list, because I use a junk email when I want to sign up for something, and if something lands in my personal email box, I know what you did, and I'm probably going to do that. So just so you know, don't do it. Don't create my email address on LinkedIn.
Don't do what you don't want done to you. And, you know, we can all tell from a mile away when someone is really sincere and when they're a generous person, when they're somebody that, you know, really wants to reach out and help other people. And just the opposite. You can also tell from a mile away when someone is being spammy and they're just out to add you to their list or, you know, buy my book or my purchase. purchase my, you know, product or service. And you just don't want that. That isn't what you want.
No,
and
golden
everything,
rule.
Everything, exactly. And everything that we do online should be with that mindset of what can I do to share, to provide value, to help people to learn more about who I am, what I do, how I can help, you know, and then they will come to you. The right people
will
come to you.
They will. Reciprocity is absolutely the best way to go. So I told you this was the quickest 60 minutes on the internet. We're down to about 4 minutes.
Yeah,
because we get to chatting. That's why. Okay, book launch tips.
Yeah.
What advice can you give people who are launching a book that maybe they know, maybe they don't know, but maybe need a refresher course?
Sure. First of all, it's never too early to start. Please don't wait until your book is going to come out in 2 weeks and then come to me, or even start yourself and say, now I'm going to do my book launch promotion. that's just not enough time to get everything ready. I really think that at least 6 months before you're ready to actually launch your book, you want to put into place some things. So I would suggest creating a spreadsheet with a checklist of things for, you know, 6 months out, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, the week before, the day of, and after, and an ongoing, what are you going to do to market your book? As someone once told me, as long as your book is for sale, you should be marketing it. So just because my book is 10 years old, it doesn't mean I should stop marketing it. You want to specifically create something, perhaps a hashtag of some sort, on Twitter in particular, for your book to use in social media messages, so that that kind of becomes the thing that everybody looks to and says, ah, I know it's your book because you've hashtagged The Way of the Warrior Mama, as an example. That's one of my clients. Another book launch tip is to really make sure that you have copy already prepared for your audience to be able to share. Everybody reaches out to everyone else and says, hey, would you mind sharing this information about my book launch? If you have something specific that they can share, they're much more likely to do that on your behalf. So you might send out an email with some sample tweets or Facebook messages that your audience can share. And that way it will help them be more likely to share it. And my biggest tip really for your book launch, especially on the day of the book launch, don't stress, particularly if things don't go quite as planned. It's okay. Book marketing is an ongoing task. And you want to make sure you have plans for it, but you should just have fun and enjoy it.
I agree. And, I mean, look at your book. When was that put out? Your
I
first
believe
book, the one that
2008 or 9, yeah.
So we're still talking about that book. So it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Same with podcasting. You don't just, when we hang up, Sue, it's not one and done. You're never going to say, oh, well, where do I find that link? Where was it? You're going to see this podcast, this episode, popping up over and over and over again over the next 12, 14, 16 months, just because there's just so much great information in it. Book marketing is the same way. I mean, you have to just kind of keep reminding people that you're out there while you're building your platform. You're gathering up your tribe, if you will. I hate that term, but it, you know, what can you do? We use it. Yeah, so, yeah, it is an ongoing thing, and I'm glad you brought that up. Oh, we have 90 seconds.
Yes.
So, Sue, where can people find you on the web?
Sure. Well, all kinds of places. My website, again, is ausoma.com. That's A-U-S-O-M-A. If anybody would love to get my free 12-page report with tips for best social media marketing practices, that can be downloaded when you sign up for my newsletter on my newsletter page. I can be found on LinkedIn, Sue Canfield. On Facebook, my business page is Ausoma. Twitter, my handle is Sue Awesome. And on Instagram, you can find Sue Canfield's Ausoma as well. I'm happy to answer anybody's questions about social media at any time. And I, again, want to thank you for letting me have this opportunity to be on your podcast. It was a lot of fun, Denise.
It was fun, and I'm so glad you were able to come on, and you've given the audience just amazing information, and I thank you for that. It's been a lot of fun catching up with you. It's been too long.
Yes, it has been. We'll have to do it again.
Well, Yeah, we're not going to do that. We're not going to let it go so late next time. Okay, so before we say goodbye, and here goes my voice again, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us on iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Sue, thank you again.
Thank you.